My special guest today is Mrs. Elizabeth Murray Usher, whose name is almost synonymous with the graciousness and unspoilt charm of Gatehouse of Fleet. Her life's devotion to conservation, yet never at the expense of realistic development, has both delighted those who share her views and irritated those who find her role as superior of Gatehouse both irksome and something of a feudal anachronism. But it cannot be argued that Gatehouse, perhaps more than any other comparable small town, has retained its character and is a place of beauty, and her influence cannot be lightly dismissed. Mrs. Murray Usher's interests are enormously wide-ranging, from farming, shooting and all country matters, to planning, education, and an early passion for cricket, learned in Leicestershire, where she spent her first years unaware of her future responsibilities.
When my grandmother heard that I was going to inherit Caley, she took Cushat Wood from the then trustees and brought me up here when I was six. I've been here ever since, except for school and going abroad.
Did you know at that time that you would inherit the estate one day?
Yes.
When did it sort of dawn on you that this was going to be your charge for your life?
I think it just permeated.
And how did you view it then as a child? Can you remember?
I don't think I did view it exactly. My grandmother had a very keen sense of beauty. She had beautiful furniture and lovely silver, which she cleaned herself. And Cushat Wood was situated in the most beautiful surroundings, with beech trees and constant cooing of cushy dews. And she always went for a walk at about 6:30 in the morning, and I went with her. And it was a magical place. And I think the idea just permeated that this was how it had got to be.
As you grew up and started to take over some of the responsibility, perhaps, how did you become involved in the running of the estate initially?
Well, before I was 21, which is when I inherited it, I went into the estate office for a bit and thought I was learning a bit. I don't know that I was learning much, but anyway, it was giving me an introduction. But when I was 21, I inherited it. It was in trust all during my father's lifetime, but actually he did die when I was 21. My grandfather, Colonel James Bailey, inherited it when he was 74, I think, and he only had it for 6 years. I think the last director would be Alexander, and then it reverted back through the Stuarts to Mr. Horatio Granville Murray Stuart, who was the grandson of General Sir William Stuart, who built Cumloden. And my grandfather was his first cousin.
So there was always a close tie with the Earls of Galloway?
Yes, the Stuart family is the connection.
Because they intermarried twice, I think, didn't
yes,
they?
Yes, two succeeding generations.
Did you feel, and do you still, that this is very much part of a family tradition, a historical ongoing of tradition?
I think it's a family duty as well as a tradition. It seemed to me unquestionable that there was nobody else to do it, and it was going to be my responsibility.
What other things do you remember from when you were young, from when you were a child here?
Oh, all sorts of irrelevancies. I was very keen on joinering, and I remember making a dog kennel that was so small that the dog had to reverse into it. But there was a great deal of fun and a great deal of laughter. The word conservation, I don't think, had come into the British language at the time. But one always had the feeling that it had got to be more or less the same, to be carried on as it was, or anyway, as nearly as possible. It was instinctive, because one was surrounded by beauty, so essentially there was no other tradition. And it's not really so very difficult. One's got to keep one's eyes open and make sure that anything that's built doesn't make a harsh impact. But of course in those days there was no planning authority. So the superior, exercising her right, was regarded with considerable disfavour. But of course, there was nobody else to do it. The local authority hasn't got the same right as the superior. The local authority can advise about colour, but can't insist on it, whereas the superior can insist completely on what is going to be built.
Still today?
And today, in spite of the fact that few duties have been abolished, the feudal conditions still remain. To begin with, it was really rather difficult because one knew what one didn't want. But what is essentially important is to know what is right It is no good saying to someone, you can't put up that, without being able to suggest what they can do. I remember once getting a plan which was of a house completely encircled with runs of brick like a sandwich cake. Well, in this case, it was merely a question of cutting out the brick, and the house is now a very acceptable small house in Gatehouse, white with a slate roof. Quite simple, really.
Do you think simplicity is one of the important elements?
Absolutely essential. There was a mania for making things decorated with various foreign and oriental devices, and I remember very well a builder saying to me once, but it's so plain, and I said, well, that's precisely what we want it to be, very plain.
Did you ever put people's backs up by this sort of approach?
Oh, yes, without doubt. But they had fun, and so did I.
Gatehouse, however, has more than just a quiet and idyllic pastoral history. From the late 18th century to the middle of the 19th, it was a fairly dynamic industrial town, and Mrs. Murray Usher's forebears were involved in that too.
There's a very good book which has just been brought out by Mr. Philip Mann called The Gatehouse Experiment, which gives the whole picture in a nutshell and is a most excellent production.
How did it start, the industrialization of Gatehouse, if you like?
Well, James Murray started it, really. He got people up from the north of England, the Bert Whistles and sundry other people. They had mills and every kind of industrial activity. Lochwinion was the source of the water power. It's a long story, but it was very concentrated while it lasted. James Murray planned the place extremely well, and it hasn't been too difficult to keep it right, but it does need thought. The last industry was the bobbin mill, and that closed during my time, and it was the main employer of labour, so it was a great loss. But one feels now that the Forestry Commission has taken over as the main employer, and one hopes that there may be some light industry eventually, presumably associated with wood. And of course Gatehouse is the centre of a very busy agricultural community. Tourism, of course, is our basic industry now.
Do you think this should be and could be expanded in the area?
I think so. It would be nice if people were not only summer folk and came a bit later.
Do you think there are other ways, perhaps, of impressing upon people the benefits of coming to a quiet and beautiful area like this?
I think it's essential to concentrate on attracting people because it's an area to get away from the noise and bustle, and essentially a place to store up the batteries.
And much more could be done, she feels, to create further attractions for the visitors, such as the proposed restoration of the old bobbin mill. And the Murray Arms Hotel, another family enterprise, has quite a history of its own to draw the attention of passers-by.
The Murray Arms was originally a small inn. I think it was one of the first houses in Gatehouse. And then James Murray added on to it and made it a coaching inn, which was quite well known as a stage on the Stranraer route. Robert Burns is reputed to have written Scots Were Hay there, which I think he probably did after a very stormy ride over the hills. And I've no doubt he had a good dram in the process.
I have no doubt he did.
Scots were here where Wallace bled. Scots one rules has often led. Welcome to your gory bed or to victory.
But it was what is now the Calais Hotel, not the famous Murray Arms, that was once the family home.
Yes, it was. And I can remember the first time I was taken up to see it when I was six. I was very impressed. and still more impressed because there was a goat called Louisa, which belonged to the tenants, which was indulging in a lot of fun with the little haystacks, knocking them about, and that greatly reduced the importance of the house and didn't overshadow me too much. But it is a lovely place. When I sold the land around to the Forestry Commission in 1934, they didn't want to take Calley House. And I was determined that the roof should not be taken off. So I said that a condition of selling them the land was they should take the house ex gratia, which they did. And they then sold it for £2,000 to a man called Stewart, who owned the Paris Hotel at Fort William. That's how it originally became a hotel. And then, of course, during the war, it was a very well-known school, the Calley School, co-educational, from pupils from the Glasgow high schools.
How would you best like to see the house, as a hotel or as a school?
It's difficult to say. I would like to see it good, whatever it is.
And are you happy with it?
Very. It plays its part in the life of the community, which is as it should be.
The responsibilities of a superior in a place like Gatehouse are fairly extensive, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And it's a terrible word, but of course it's a Scottish legal term that means precisely what it says. It means that in the case of old titles that have been lost, I can grant a charter of Novodamus or whatever is required, as distinct from the fact that I can control what is being built. So it does incur a good deal of responsibility, but it doesn't seem very arduous. It comes in the day's work.
Has it been a life of work you've enjoyed?
Oh yes, tremendously.
What do you think are the most satisfying or rewarding parts of being in your position?
Having a lot of friends of all kinds.
Mrs. Murayashi, your responsibilities, your care and concern have actually extended further than Gatehouse, and you've been involved in planning and in the County Council in the days before regionalisation, a lot of things that extended your responsibilities and your interest.
Yes, I've been very fortunate. The County Council was tremendous fun, and so was the Education Committee, and I was lucky enough to be on the Scottish Economic Council and on the Tourist Board and the Royal Fine Arts Commission, which brought me in contact with a very wide circle of different people, all very intelligent and interesting. And so I've been extremely lucky.
Can we talk about planning for the moment? Because I think you have some very strong views about sort of current planning laws and so on.
Planning is very simple, really. It's really a question of laying down certain guidelines and sticking to them. And within them, there is a certain latitude. You can compromise, but you can't compromise, I think, on colour. And you can't put things on the very edge of a hill so that it stands up stark against the landscape. You've got to make sure that things fit in, not only of themselves, but with their neighbours. I think that is the thing that really sometimes goes wrong. I remember when there were going to be alterations to the bank here many years ago, and I wrote and explained that I thought it was going to be out of proportion, and they very kindly redesigned it. But the architect told me that he had in fact not been in Gatehouse for 10 years. So that this building was being designed completely out of relation to the buildings around it.
Do you think the planners of today have the right attitude? Do you think they're getting it right?
Yes, I do. I think they are. I think it's not very easy, and they always have problems to contend with, but I think by and large, yes. One thing that is important is to try and regard each problem as an individual. Having said this, I know it doesn't sound logical after us having said that everything should be considered in a group, but I think it's most important that the planners should personally make themselves aware of all the problems involved from the point of view of the applicant.
Mrs. Murayashi believes that Gatehouse has lost some of its character now the secondary school is closed. Somehow, she says, it's not quite the same when the smaller children alone are seen running out of school. The time she spent working on the Royal Fine Art Commission with people from all over Scotland was one of great interest and enjoyment for her. But how does the commission actually work?
things are referred to the Royal Fine Art Commission. They have no statutory authority, but they can recommend. And the whatever the object was would be brought forward and explained with maps and things, and then we made it a certain decision and made a certain recommendation. Sometimes it was accepted, sometimes it wasn't. But generally it was taken account of.
A colleague of hers on the Fine Arts Commission was economist Professor Alan Thompson of Heriot Watt University.
I would say that Mrs. Betty Murray Usher built upon her experience, the marvellous thing she did in Galloway and saving her area from unnecessary and perhaps unfortunate developments. I think that experience she built on and made available to the rest of Scotland through her membership of the Royal Fine Arts Commission for Scotland. I served with her on this. I was always enormously impressed with her knowledge. Although she was a lay member of the commission, which consists, as you probably know, of lay members and architects and planners, she was extremely well informed. And in interviews we gave to developers, to property developers, to architects who wanted to pursue developments in all parts of Scotland, Mrs. Betty Murray Usher was always first to ask quite pertinent questions, quite perceptive questions, to look at the plans, look at the illustrations and the drawings, and to ensure that in fact the buildings proposed were going to look like the things which were before the commission. And I'm bound to say this doesn't always happen, and I would think all parts of Scotland owe a great deal to Mrs. Betty Murray Usher, and I think she gained that experience in Gatehouse of Fleet.
Mrs. Murray Usher seems to have a very broad view. She seems to be able to see in her mind what things are going to look like.
Yes, and I think that is enormously useful on a commission where lay members sometimes haven't got that very strong visual sense. They just see diagrams, plans, drawings. And I think Betty Murray Usher had this view. She really could see it, and she could see the colours, and she could see the landscape, and you can see the relationship of buildings to the landscape. This is a very, very rare gift, and she had it to perfection. I think, personally, and with her circle of friends, and the architects, planners, and commissioners like myself who worked with her, is one of a very delightful person. Strong-willed, knowing exactly what she wanted, working hard to get it, totally straightforward, totally without malice, never devious. One can't unfortunately say that of all the people one's worked with in one's life. I think she is a remarkable woman, and part of her contribution, I think, is the affection and regard she's held by everybody who's worked with her professionally in architecture and planning.
Another lifelong interest has been dry stone walling, and Mrs. Murray Usher has supported and encouraged the biannual dry stain diking competition by holding it on the Calley estate. She was asked to take it over soon after its founder, the late Colonel Rainsford Hannay, died.
It really has gone from strength to strength, because we started a dry stone walling association. It was at a time when I was, I think, on the Roads Committee, and I was able to get the names of all the road surveyors in Great Britain, and we wrote to them all, and that was the beginning of the Dry Stone Walling Association. But this has gone from strength to strength, and the Dry Stone Walling Association is now well established as distinct from the Stewartry Dry Stone Diking Committee, and I think we are shortly to become a branch of the association.
It's extraordinary, actually, because so many country skills and crafts are diminishing, but diking doesn't seem
to
be.
In no way is it diminishing. Very much the reverse. It has been really a tremendous success, and every year there are more young people going into it.
Why?
Well, it's a craft, and it must give satisfaction to work, and it's well paid, and there's plenty of demand for it.
Now, you've been a great lover of the countryside all your life. Have you got favourite areas?
I suppose one's favourite area is one's home. Well, obviously that is so, but when one goes away, one finds the most lovely country everywhere. I love New Zealand. But I used to go to Italy, the north of Italy, quite a lot. My grandmother lived out there, and I was very fond of Italy. At that time, I was supposed to be going to sing professionally, and I went to Italy to have lessons.
And was that a part of your life that you enjoyed, the singing?
Oh, very much. I was very fortunate. I went to a lot of operas and had a lot of music in my background, and it was great fun.
So has music always been important to you?
Very.
And still?
Oh, yes.
What sort of music do you like best?
Well, I was taken to my first Wagner opera at Covent Garden when I was 8. So I was thrown in the deep end. So I have a very Catholic taste. I like Italian opera, too, very much.
If you were to pick a favourite, do you have one?
Wagner, I think, probably. The sort of war cry of the Valkyrie, I think, is a pretty good one.
I'm sorry for only having that version of The Ride of the Valkyries. I wondered if Mrs. Murray Usher had missed live music, living as she does in Gatehouse.
No, I don't think so. I mean, music's part of my life, but not an essential part of it. There's always something to be got out of wherever you go. It's not always the same thing.
Looking back over your life, Mrs. Murray Usher, are there things that stand out that were either turning points or very important parts of your life that made a great impression on you?
I've been lucky in meeting a lot of interesting people. I can't think of anything really outstanding because so many interesting things have happened. I think from my own personal point of view, probably when I sold land to the Forestry Commission was the beginning of a change of policy, because it began reducing the size of the estate. And then I sold quite a lot of farms, but all under conservation agreements to the National Trust, so they cannot at any time be built on except in connection with agriculture or forestry, and then only subject to the plans being approved.
What happens to the estate after you?
I wonder. There isn't very much of the estate left, really. We have made a sort of foundation for the sort of well-being of Gatehouse, which I think should work in all right with the aid of trustees, which I imagine members of my family will participate in. And I've tried to leave it as tidily as possible, which isn't very easy.
What about the new bypass? Do you think this is going to help Gatehouse?
I'm sure it's going to help Gatehouse. I first saw the plan 40 years ago, so nobody can say it's been rushed. I'm sure it'll do nothing but good for Gatehouse, and it's going to have the most magnificent views. I hope everybody won't whistle down it too fast. At least I hope that they will divert, as long as the containers don't.
So do you think people will still come into Gatehouse?
Oh, yes, I think so. It'll be so much more peaceful.
If you had your life to live all over again, would you change anything in it?
I'm not sure that it's a very easy thing to think about that, because I think one's life has the pattern it has, and there's very little you can do beyond live it from day to day as best you can. I don't mean that you can't do anything. You obviously can do anything of your own velocity, but I think that the pattern in the end is probably what's intended.
You're renowned, if I may say so, Mrs. Marasha, for your great sort of vitality and your drive and what you've contributed to the area.
I had an Irish grandmother.
That's the answer, is it?
I think it's quite a lot of the answer. An Irish grandmother has given me a great sense of humour, I think, which is lucky. And it also, I think, it gives a great capacity for laughing at oneself, which I think is essential.
Do you think that's one of the main things in life?
It's a very good thing. Because you'll be quite sure other people will laugh at you. You might just as well laugh with them.
What other qualities do you think lead perhaps to one making the best of one's life?
Well, a sense of responsibility, I suppose. Also, a challenge which is perpetually there.
Do you think that today's young have the same sense of responsibility?
I think that today's young are very remarkable, and I think they deserve greater encouragement from the point of view of peace and quiet. It seems to me there's an awful lot of jangling round the ears of the young now, and that they would be very much happier without it.
Have you any other thoughts on perhaps the long-term future of Gatehouse? What would you like to be remembered for most? And people look back and see what you've done for Gatehouse.
A difficult question, really. I think just for being part of Gatehouse.
Guest in a round Sawi was Mrs. Elizabeth Murray Usher of Gatehouse of Fleet.